Welcome back to episode 167. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you, all things considered. I'm still alive, so never take that for granted, of course. Eventful week coming on after the huge protests that occurred in Europe, particularly in Germany, but also, from what I understand, in England, too, 40,000 people in Trafalgar Square. There's anywhere from a quarter... Well, according to the press, 20,000 protesters in Germany, but it looks like there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions. I don't know how to count once the crowd gets that big. It can be anything. Protesting the lockdown measures, the measures supposedly imposed to fight the dreaded COVID-19 pandemic. Of course, the protests were largely ignored here in the United States, but smeared in the Lugan press in Europe. Of course, neo-Nazis and conspiracy theorists. Apparently all converged on Berlin to protest the Merkel government policies of phased reopenings, continued lockdowns, staggered reopenings, however you want to call it. There's growing impatience with the measures, but the governments seem intent upon maintaining and increasing these measures, the vice grip, the boot on the face of humanity. We've had stories out of Australia, Melbourne, the Victoria province, where people are actually being arrested for online postings about protests, because apparently to talk about protesting the lockdown is considered inciting riots, and therefore even verbally opposing the lockdown in those areas is unlawful, and you may be subject to arrest. Indeed, a few have been. So that's going on out there.
You can oppose the lockdown, but you have to keep it to yourself. Because what they were actually saying is that you were opposing the lockdown and saying that you would be walking in a certain area. They didn't actually say they would be, with bullhorns or something. They said, I'm opposing lockdown. I'm going to be here at a certain point.
Uh-huh.
But that was sufficient for them to send the police. You had two examples of this. It wasn't just one. And that really intimidated the Melbourneese. They didn't show up for the event, which was today, and it was just a handful of people who were quickly arrested.
And so, one of them was a pregnant woman, right?
Yeah, pregnant woman. Yeah. And then the other was a former or newly released Australian soldier. So these aren't your criminal, Antifa fentanyl brigade types. These are upstanding Australians. And so it hit a chord. There was enormous outcry, but no real kind of in the street violence from the people. One of the criticisms about the particular event that these guys were talking about, which was this event that was held today, is that tomorrow, or perhaps it's Monday, but it's one of the 2 days, Andrews, the megalomaniac fascist premier, is going to give his new proclamation of how long the, whatever it is, stage 72, you have these little categories and things, but the lockdown that keeps you inside your house except for an hour a day, how long that's going to be extended. And so people were saying, well, let's wait till after that. Let's not give them an excuse to extend this. I've been in touch with a few people who live in the area who are locked down, and I gave them my 2 cents, which is it doesn't matter, because once they take away the right of assembly, it's pretty hard for dictators to give that right back, because they know it'll be used against them. So I would bet that with Andrews, he will, say, no, it's going to be another 6 weeks or something. He might come down from one level to another, but whatever level they come down to, they will not permit any kind of actual assembly from the people.
From what I understand, Parliament is suspended, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what process does the citizen have to protest these proclamations, these decrees? Not even laws, they're decrees. I'm not sure what the particulars of the Australian Constitution is, but what I'm saying is that to say that it's unlawful to protest because it's unlawful, it's a self-justifying law, and they've deprived people any method of voicing their opposition or organizing opposition to these decrees under the guise, of course, of a public emergency, which for which there is no evidence.
Right, exactly. And they actually did convene Parliament for a vote, but they aren't scheduling elections just yet. And so it's basically there's no way for the people living in Melbourne to have a democratic response. But, you know, Tim, as I have been saying in my normal cheerful way to these people, I was going, look, the virus is fake. We'll show how fake it is later on in the show when we go into the CDC death numbers and how they, you know, equate this. But it's obviously fake. Okay, so we can accept this. Now, this means you're dealing with real malevolence.
Yes.
This
is,
you know, a government that's gone wrong or is not thinking clearly or is just, you know, greed and avarice has somehow, you know, clouded their judgment. We're talking about deep-rooted genocidal evil. So the idea of trying to use an election process, I mean, I just think this is far-fetched. I think that they can assume that the government is a secret society, that it is using the lockdown for genocide in one way or another, and they can act accordingly.
Well, to prove that it's so arbitrary is compare the you know, Victorian government's response to this lady posting a Facebook thing about a protest the following next couple of days, and their response to the Black Lives Matter protest in June, where they, in essence, came out and supported it, said we're not going to force any of the restrictions. Yeah. It'd be too dangerous, too burdensome to too many protesters, and also what they're protesting is a worthy cause. These are the statements from the very officials who came out and justified the arrest of this pregnant woman. You know, so the,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, so there isn't any, you're not dealing with misguided people. I mean, you're dealing with people who have a very specific agenda to kill you.
And I mean, I think I've seen the videos of Dan Andrews and also that chubby police chief over there, or what do they call him? I
forget what that guy. He's just they're all Freemasons, of course.
They all this.
They're all Masons. You watch their handshakes. It's just a cesspool of masonry.
Yeah, he has this empty look. Particularly Dan Andrews has this empty stare when he's saying these things. He claims he wasn't aware of the video of the woman being arrested. Of course, the police commissioner out there said that it was bad optics. He admits that. But it wasn't bad what they were doing. You know, and some people have written off trying to excuse the police officers for following orders. I don't buy that. At this point, no, don't follow the orders. That's not an excuse. I'm sorry. If you're given,
it would be. It's the same rationale that people basically use, you know, in the trials of so-called German atrocity perpetrators at the end of World War II.
Every tyranny
standard you're supposed to not go underneath. And how can these police in Melbourne who are enforcing, you know, an hour a day of wandering around and exercise. Yes. I mean, how can that not be below the lowest threshold of any kind of, you know, standard human law? So they're just, they're just jackboot thugs of dictators.
Yeah.
All they are.
Yeah. There was a, regarding Australia, there was a Melbourne protester, Sam Newman. Apparently he's a AFL star. I guess that's the Australian Football League.
Yeah.
Has told Sky News he was threatened with being arrested for simply trying to point out the draconian measures being inflicted on Victorians for no good. Former AFL great and footy show star Sam Newman was quick to backtrack on his call to arms to 250,000 of Melbournians to protest against stage 4 lockdowns. Of all the protests that we have put up with, how about 250,000 of us gather in CBD to take the city state back before every previous march will have been pointless, he posted. Twitter on Sunday, as anti-lockdown protesters clashed with police in the Victorian capital. The comments were slammed by many as irresponsible, with one accusing the former AFL champion of inciting a riot, of course, and another of asking him to just go away. Please. In response to one critic, Newman called the protest an expression of desperation for our sanity, vowing there'd be no rioting, looting, or arson or violence. But on Tuesday afternoon, the 300-game player for Geelong was given an official warning by Victoria Police for his comments. Newman has not been charged over the comments he made. Newman on Wednesday night spoke about the meeting with Victoria Police when he spoke of Sky News, when he spoke with Sky News' Alan Jones. I'm a bit bemused by what is going on in 2020 down here in Melbourne. Yes, the police came in today and said if I was thinking of having a rally or attending one, I would be put in jail. Newman said he has read the letter police, the red letter, has read the letter police had handed to him. Mind you, this is not the fault of the police, a typical excuse. They're only working under instructions, but my point was that I should have said 500,000 people should march through the city. I didn't say that it was tongue-in-cheek aside to point out the draconian measures that are being inflicted on us for no good.
Yeah. I wanted to also mention, we could spend the rest of the show on just the events in Australia, but I wanted to mention the progress in the global homolodor that the Judaic Masonic project has the advances. I would suggest people read Joe McCullough's article, Bill Gates Secretly Dictates Global Food Policy, too. It's very, very chilling to see that Gates is not only entwined in the food industry and distribution far more, evidently, in terms of actual dollars invested than in vaccines. But that he has power, which is he has hidden. And with vaccines, it's not too hidden, you know, what his investments are. But here, Mercola says that, Gates has gone out of his way to keep it hidden. So that's very troubling. And then the other one is by Ice Age Farmer. He's a blogger that I enjoy checking out. And he pointed out in a video that the food supply is spontaneously combusting. He said you don't stand anywhere near grain supplies. And he pointed out how many of them have blown up over the last, 2 months. He calls it a controlled demolition of the supply chain. And he pointed out something I was unaware of, that the Beirut atomic explosion, you know, that huge bomb, that it took out a storehouse of 70% of Beirut's grain.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an example of what he says. You don't want to stand too close to any food supply storage units because they are spontaneously combusting. So I think this should, these two articles will just point out how realistic and obvious the starvation technique to control us is going to be and is in play. And then I just wanted to throw in this other little thing that I think is very important for people to see, kind of to round out the good news. Salty Cracker has posted, it was another guy I really like, good sense of humor. He's posted a video called Portland Antifa is being housed by city Democrats in homeless camp. Now, this is a video that everyone should check out because it's absolutely revelatory about the world we live in. In Portland, they've had, I think, 90 days of, violent protests.
Didn't the mayor vacate his residence?
Yeah, the mayor was driven out. Some citizens are wondering, well, why don't we just find out who these guys are and arrest them? Why don't we do that? It'd be pretty easy because most of them are staggering around on fentanyl. I mean, and some of them, like Trumpet Man, are virtually becoming brand names. You know, this one guy is always there. He's like a drugged out white guy with scraggly blonde hair, but he plays a trumpet during the, when breaking windows and burning things. He's called Trumpet Man. So anyway, this one intrepid guy found the camp, which is basically is being sold to the public as a homeless camp, but he got above it on a overpass and he said, this is just like a military camp. This is what it looks like. All of the tents are the same color. They're evenly spaced apart. It looks well structured. All of the facilities for food and toiletry, everything is like organized. And he recognized people from the demonstrations in the camp, and he actually videotaped. He, for example, Trumpet Man was there. Then he was driven out, or he was pretty courageous. He didn't really want to budge, but eventually the video ends because the guys below were using slingshots to try to hit him. So you could see that. Well, anyway, the point is this camp is being funded by the city of Portland. So if anyone wonders, how is it that Antifa can attack Portland's middle-class businesses night after night? Well, this is how. They are being literally funded by the Portland government, by Soros's DA, mayor, city council, government. And obviously, after 90 days, they really don't have the people who are supporting them really don't have a defense of, well, we don't know what they're doing. Are, gee, that's news to me that they've been destroying the city for 90 days. I mean, this is preposterous. Obviously, this is a project. And so, point being, the governments in many instances are a secret society. When they control the police and the media, it's up to the citizens to defend themselves. So when you see this video, I think people will be aware of how important it is to be armed and organized.
Well, you can't expect George Soros to carry the entire burden of the revolution. You said the city of Portland has, kicked in a little bit to pay for it. And of course, the taxes of which are paid for the very businesses are being driven out of business by the
Yeah, they're paying for,
city
I
of the
mean,
state's
the
policies.
and if in looking at the quality of the humans that are wandering around the camp, I mean, these guys couldn't, support a mother and baby ducks with bread. I mean, they're just, wasted kind of, semi-human individuals. It looks like fentanyl has just gotten to all of them. So they're pretty wiped out. The only way they can exist is through revenue from the government, obviously. And the idea, of course, is taxation from these businesses will dry up, and then that'll be the end of their existence. But sad to say, I think most of the money the city of Portland is going to be taking in is through federal grants and fairy dust money like that.
Yeah,
So.
there was a controversy this week about that because Donald Trump threatened to use executive orders to cut off federal disaster funding to some of these cities, and then the governor of New York challenged President Trump to visit New York, and he better bring his own army because they'd show him they mean business if he bothered to show up in his home city.
Yeah, I mean there is Cuomo, the idea of like full disclosure Cuomo, who won't let the murder of that occurred in the retirement homes that he was responsible for by putting infected people into each of these homes. The idea of him criticizing Trump, just scratch your head. But anyway, that's just the world we live in.
Yeah, it's and yeah, any of these cities, whether it's Portland, Chicago, New York, is the city, the mayors, they have the resources, the manpower to stop any sizable protest or riot, rather. But they've chosen not to. They've let the stuff spread, and it may backfire on them politically, at least at that level, because the you know as they was that it was Don Lemon of CNN, the degenerate news presenter, saying that this looks bad, and so they better get the Democrats better look, get a hold of, get control of it because it looks bad and it's affecting Biden in the polls. So that's what matters. It's not the mayhem, the violence, destruction of property, destruction of lives, and murder that bothers Don Lemon. It's the fact that it might be helping Donald Trump.
God, he is just such a piece of work. I mean, I don't know who watches CNN or Fox News, but you know, all of the presenters are obviously compromised, and it's just, you know, the one thing I liked about the protests over the weekend was, besides the size of them, and Berlin was certainly larger than 2 million. I mean, I've seen some video footage. It's hard to count. I mean, you know, how do you estimate? But it was just, it's the largest demonstration I've ever seen. The fact is that then good old David Icke spoke in England. Now, I think Icke is, you know, compromised. Really good article about Icke by Miles Mathis. I think the article was this week. But, I mean, I thought, you know, ever since the lizard people idea, mm-hmm. I saw him as controlled opposition. But, you know, and Mathis points out, he has the same kind of understanding I do, is that they have to tell you things that you like to hear because you know a lot of things. And the more information that's kind of held by the people, the kind of deeper rabbit hole information the controlled opposition guys have to do in order to be credible. So it's really, in an odd way, you know, if you look at people like Alex Jones and Icke, they have been, very potent as far as developing the alternative media. And of course they're hoping to control it when push comes to shove, but we'll see. You know, I'm not sure they'll be able to. I think that they stormed the Reichstag in Germany, and this was a false flag. It was this woman who was telling the people with a bullhorn, she was on stage, that Donald Trump was in Berlin. This is the sort of Q thing, you know, that is very popular in Berlin. And she's the one who actually organized the storming of the Reichstag. But the Germans who were involved in this are really sensitive to false flag and to the promotion of, you know, Nazism as a concept. So they videotaped the whole thing, and there's a great presentation called False Flag on Reichstag. Unfortunately, it's in German, but I've been told that there will be a transcript or subtitles in English shortly. But if you can read or understand German, it's available right now. And it's I've been sent a transcript of the German that I was able to translate so I could, you know, follow along. And it is extraordinary. This is the kind of detail and kind of self-governance that the alternative media has to do. The Germans are way ahead of anything that's going on in America, way ahead. They are really well organized. They've got some absolutely brilliant people. Something like this, they just immediately understood as to what it was. They documented it. They put out this, kind of refutation of what happened, because what they were doing, the point of the storming of the Reichstag was to basically put forward the idea that there was neo-Nazis, right? They had the Imperial German flag, which is associated with the far right. So this was the, you know, tip off that this was all just false. It was just a false flag, basically. So they're trying to create this idea of that neo-Nazis were somehow involved with the protest. And then they were going to juxtapose this to the idea that it was a love fest, right? It's just a way of kind of controlling the, you know, the meme, how people understand these things. But anyway, the Germans found out about it and put out all that information. So good for them.
Well, that's the thing. It's right now, I mean, in Germany, you know, when the Nazis took power in 1933, they implemented this Gleichschaltung policy, which is called coordination or concentration. I think sort of translates to coordination. I think what it translates to in German. But it involves sort of overt censorship of the media, control of the media, to order to consolidate, you know, the authoritarian regime that the Third Reich came to be in the 1930s. Such ham-fisted methods aren't really necessary anymore, because when you have control of the media, the news media, entertainment, advertising, you know, corporate coordination of these things with memes and messaging, even the arts, you don't need direct control. Just like the same way that now if you post something critical of the World Health Organization or the CDC or the coronavirus narrative, the pandemic narrative, you'll get banned on Twitter or YouTube, censored, shadow banned, these things. So when you have the collusion of big tech in suppressing dissent, you don't have to overtly repeal the First Amendment.
Right.
You know, they'll turn around and say, well, it's the free market. Why don't you go and build your own government subsidized global internet platform? Okay, I can do that on my own. Okay, if I get the government to help pay for it, maybe I could if the government subsidized it. But that's obviously what the point I'm making is that these things aren't really private entities. They were built and financed by Inkytel, which is the CIA, and also the whole internet system itself, the whole infrastructure was paid for by the taxpayer under the pretext of a defense measure. That was
DARPA.
Yeah.
They had alphabet soup of like, but the key thing to me is that at the onset, when you had Stuart Brand, imagining the personal computer, that's his term, incidentally. Mm-hmm. He used that expression first. You had basically, the merry pranksters, the culture destroyers, the drug and sex, drugs, and rock and roll group, were living with the people who were then going to, at the same time, develop the personal computer, the mouse, and all of this. It was one group.
Mm-hmm.
And they shared the philosophy, they shared the drugs, and also they shared government funding. And so now, they each group went a separate way in terms of cultural destruction. But now we can look back and see that it was a single project. That when you look at, the amount of pornography that is being watched on the internet every day, it's obvious that group back in Silicon Valley, in the mid 60s, that this was what they had in mind. And they also, as you said, they have now a media that is so powerful. This media is much more, has access to our minds. How much time is spent on the iPhone, on the internet,
yes. Yeah.
As opposed to, watching Walter Cronkite drone on about Kennedy's death or something. So now they have complete access to our minds, and they're very sophisticated, and they're trying to program us to give up our humanity to become part of the brave new world as an epsilon or a delta. This is what we're experiencing is the educational process of the delta and the epsilon. That's what the internet is.
And you have all this messaging where, during the pandemic, we must stay together so we can be together. We must stay apart so we can be together.
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
It's like war is love, war is peace. Hate is love. Whatever. I mean, it's the ministry of love, the ministry of peace, the ministry of abundance, whatever they called it. But it's one of these things where, they all this messaging, and now they have everyone so brainwashed. Not everyone. I mean, obviously, I'm exaggerating, but. This is why the bulk of the public is so compliant.
Well, the most brilliant example of the mind control is the COVID epidemic.
Yes.
I mean, this is the real-time piece de resistance of what the people in Silicon Valley back in the 60s had in mind. I mean, this is us permitting ourselves to be locked down by the fear of an epidemic of a virus that probably doesn't even exist. Mm-hmm. If it does exist, it doesn't have any lethality whatsoever. And yet, this is the rationale for the people in Melbourne. This is the rationale for the lockdown in New York. I mean, it's worldwide. And yet, there is no virus.
Yeah, it's fairly easy to do. People, how could they do this? Well, it's fairly easy. And I've laid it out before. You just come out with the press reports, the news stories, the lockdown measures, and it's the effect proving the cause. Because after all, there's got to be a pandemic. It's got to be a virus out there because you have all these icons and in the stores and signs and restrictions, and you have these events being canceled. And they wouldn't do this, and you know, but it's fairly easy to do. And you ask yourself, why would they do it? And who is they? Well, they would do it because it's a pretext for an unprecedented power grab and massive wealth redistribution. And you know, would they lie to, you know, would psychopathic politicians and oligarchs lie to the public about that to achieve that objective? You know, think about it.
Right.
You know, well, all around, if you scrutinize the science and the data, which we'll get into, does strongly suggest that there's really no there, at least not a public health emergency. None of these measures, this is why none of them make any sense from a public health measure. They don't make any sense. They're irrational. They're unhealthy. They're not working, but that's the point. They're not supposed to work for that objective. They're there to entrain us, to condition us to accept these restrictions on our personal autonomy. You know, the mask requirements will soon become the vaccine requirements, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were probably the first one, I guess you and John Rappaport were the first two I'd ever actually heard bring up the possibility that there just wasn't any virus. I mean, it seemed so overblown, but at the same time, there had to have been a kernel of truth to it that they were exaggerating in order to create the social control. But you and John both were skeptics of that because, well, I guess you'd been through the HIV thing.
Yeah, and there's over 200 generic coronaviruses.
And there's some, right. So yeah. there was some quite puzzling things. I mean, I wasn't, certainly up to speed with testing for viruses or any of this. I mean, I'd seen Rappaport's work, and I knew from HIV, we've done a show on HIV, that it didn't spread into the heterosexual community, strongly suggesting that there wasn't a virus, right? And so I've mentioned that, you know, I thought that you and John had done a good job of creating the grammar so at least we could question it. So we agreed we'd talk about kind of the science of the testing this week. And there was a couple news stories that came out that precipitated this. And so I spent a couple days kind of staring at it. And I will tell you, Tim, I have never seen a bigger intellectual cesspool than the testing procedure of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It is just insane. First of all, we should probably talk about, there was this internet buzz earlier in the week that there was only 6% of the people who had died of COVID had died from COVID. The rest had comorbidities, right? Mm-hmm. And this was people brought out the idea that the CDC had stealthily brought out this new information. Well, they were incorrect. This wasn't right. We've actually done shows where we've talked about this very thing several months ago.
Mm-hmm.
We did a show where we talked about the distinction that the CDC was making between COVID and also pneumonia and flu, with pneumonia, with flu. And you could see that, as we said then, that the vast majority of them had some kind of comorbidity that was visible even in the CDC's analysis. So it wasn't a new presentation of numbers by the CDC. I think what they did, I haven't verified this, but what I suspect is they just changed the way they formatted it so people could see it more easily. But then the government shills stepped in, like Mike Adams, the health ranger, and a couple other, you know, you can always tell these guys, they have very sophisticated blog sites, you know, and usually a fancy name. But they were saying, oh, no, blog, the conspiracy theorists are wrong. What is happening is people have COVID, and then they get pneumonia, then they get the respiratory diseases. But without the COVID, they wouldn't be dying. And so that's what the CDC number is. It isn't that they are not dying, just with the COVID. They're dying from the COVID. And so that was the counterpoint that they made to keep the horror porn of the existence of the virus in people's minds. But in fact, this was completely untrue, and it goes into the nature of the death certificate. And probably don't know this, Tim. I certainly didn't. But back in April, or actually late March, March 23rd, just in time for the jump in fatalities from the Cuomo, you know, insertion of the infected people, the CDC changed the definitions of how to represent a fatality.
Oh, this was Robert Kennedy Jr. covered this, yeah.
He did, exactly. Yeah. And I didn't understand just how amazing what they did was, because Kennedy has so many facts, you know. But what happened was there had been a standard that had been in existence since 2003 for how you represent death. And so they did a number of things. The goal was to create both an incredible amount of cases, which we are experiencing now, but also they needed deaths, right? To this is the horror porn, to make us frightened. So they created actual deaths by inserting infected people into retirement homes. This is a complete breach, right? Absolute breach of medical protocol. Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully Cuomo will be imprisoned for this. I doubt it, but hopefully. So they did this, and this really, skyrocketed. If you look at the numbers, you'll see that bulge, you know, in late March, early May, huge bulge. And these were this low-hanging fruit. But they also had two other novel approaches to create actual deaths. One is they mandated as a standard protocol to intubate anyone who was having a hard time breathing. This, they don't really know how many people died from the ventilators, but a whole bunch did, because it's obviously something you wouldn't do to someone who's, you know, having lung problems. You just do it to keep people alive long enough to get the family there. It's an absolute death sentence. So anyway, they also had, at least according to nurses who complained about it, they implemented a do not revive. So anyone who was close to mortality, they just said, don't revive. They had this kind of assembly line attitude that had never, according to the nurses, never been there before. It was all under the auspice of there's going to be so many millions of people dying that we have to just expedite things, right? We got to move them down the system. So they stuffed people in the retirement homes. They intubated anyone who was had a hard time breathing. And then they had do not revive when they, you know, came close. So they actually had real deaths. But this you know, wasn't anywhere near enough to keep the horror porn going, so that they then, at the same time, they changed the financial structure for hospitals in terms of mortality. Now, people have mentioned that, you know, there was a bonus for COVID death, right?
Mm-hmm.
$13,000 for a COVID death, typically it'd be $8,000 to $9,000, $39,000 if you use a ventilator. I don't have good data on what it was without COVID, but these are good numbers. But what is not reported is there was actually another step, which was, I think, far more influential in how the hospitals how they record their deaths. There is a 20% Medicare bonus or premium for any death that is COVID. And this is really where the rubber hits the road, is where every death that they mark as COVID, because remember, Medicare is going to be the primary funding for all these hospitals, there was a 20% bonus. So this was, again, these are all brand new. They were created at the time when the horror porn was starting to ramp up. And then the other financial change that was made is they got rid of elective surgery.
Yeah, so the hospitals have no income other than COVID deaths.
Exactly. So they got rid of the primary source of revenue, got rid of it through, they didn't get rid of it. They just said, we're frowning on it. And they said, you have to justify it. And you have to show that this isn't going to take the place of treating COVID. So they had a language that went out that intimidated the hospitals. The hospitals all put the elective surgery on hold. And so now you have the financial incentive for the hospitals to If it's COVID, you know, if there's any way we can call it COVID, they will. So then the testing. Now, the testing is a complete, it's just insane. They have this PCR, which, as Rappaport has been screaming about, they are typically using 40 cycles. Don't want to go into the scientism, but basically they take a little strand of the genetic material of a virus. They then look for it, and if they find it, they replicate it. Now, the normal number of replications, because they run the system over and over again to try to, you know, to create a mass amount of it so they can actually see if it's there, see how much the patient have, would be 25. The test that they're using is 40. So the New York Times, of all places, they did the story, they broke it last week, which said that there is increasing evidence that people with existing chronic conditions, this was August 29th, New York Times. Potentially 90% of those who have tested positive for COVID-19 have such insignificant amounts of the virus present in their bodies that such individuals do not need to isolate it, nor are they candidates for contact tracing. Okay, so in three sets of testing compiled by officials in Massachusetts, New York, and Nevada, up to 90% of the people testing positive carried barely any virus. Okay. So
why the contact tracing and why the quarantining?
Well, exactly.
And Dr. Fauci, I think, came out last week, or was it this week, where he said that typically asymptomatic people are not spreaders. You have to be symptomatic, which
right.
is we've been saying for months, by the way. So, you know, he's contradicting himself. So why
right.
masks? Why,
but, you know, it's they ebb and flow just based on what is. You know, what they think they can, they backtrack. The classic example of that was Lewin in Ventura, who said, you know, we're going to go into the homes and get the kids and separate the families. And the next day there were like death threats. And then the day after that, he said, I didn't really mean any of that. You know, so they probe. And anyway, so Fauci backed away. But the idea that you have 90% of the positives, which are the cases. Now, bear in mind, all the lockdowns in the states, mm-hmm. like in California, it's on the cases.
That's what they're calling the case-demic now. Because
case-demic, right. So 90% of them are in this category of, they're not actually even infected. Because, see, what they're actually replicating with the test, with the PCR, is not a living virus. It's just a piece of the virus. If the immune system has killed COVID,
it's debris, yes.
Right. And then if this test is run and picks one of them up, yep, there it is. We've got it. Now, if they run it 40 times, they'll come up with a number saying there is an infection.
Well, that's why anyone who's had a cold or coronavirus, if you will, can test positive because the RNA sequence is similar. And, you know, this is.
I know. But, you know, Tim. It just gets so much worse. I mean, this is really like the most coherent part of the testing. The actual complete insanity, it's almost like jumping the shark, you know, I mean, it's just so crazy, is the actual instructions from the CDC to the hospitals. Remember, we've talked about, well, they're making sure that you want to go COVID because that's where the money is, right? So they've done all that. So then they go, well, okay, so we have on the 23rd of March, just in time for the Cuomo's body counts, they put in this new, you know, a brand new way of like representing mortality. And so they said that in most cases, we expect the result to be COVID. They actually put this at the beginning of the statement. Now, this replaced the statement prior in the one that had the 2003, talking about how stringent the standards had to be, how you had to have lab testing. We don't want to see any guesswork. We want to have actual lab testing. But here, no, that's all gone. Now, so they say that if it is believed Right. That it was a COVID, it had these different categories, then it is a COVID death. Okay, now that would mean that COVID is in part one. It's kind of, this is again, it's a little technical, but they have part one and part two. Part one is how you register the fatality. Okay, so this is what would be in the coroner's report as what killed him. But now you really can't put any comorbidities in part one. It can only put COVID. The comorbidities have to be placed in part two. So right off the bat, you've got basically craziness, because why? What if it's pneumonia? And so this now they said, okay, there are these clinical criteria. Now here's where it just jumps the shark. And this, I had no idea this was going on. I was so shocked. I went to a Cottage Hospital and talked to someone I knew there, and he actually looked it up on the computer. He was amazed too. But this is actually how our local hospital creates fatalities. Okay, so you can have clinical criteria. Okay, now I'm not, this is actually, I'm reading it. This is literally what the instructions say. Clinical criteria are at least two of the following symptoms: fever, chills, rigor, headache, sore throat, or taste disorder. Or you have one of the following symptoms: cough, shortness of breath, or difficulty breathing.
Okay. Sounds like a cold.
Well, could be, but no, if you have that, that's called A1, and that is a COVID fatality. In other words, now bear in mind the hospital, you come in, they're going to get more money if they can check the box of COVID. Mm-hmm. And this is the criteria. Fever, chills, sore throat, taste disorder, or a cough. But now this is, you also have a laboratory criteria, which is, you know, the PCR test, which we talked about is just kind of crazy. But then here's my favorite, Tim. Epidemiologic linkage. This is called A3, and this is what will enable you to declare someone as a COVID fatality. One or more of the following exposures in the 14 days before the onset of symptoms: close contact with a probable case of COVID-19.
Probable, okay.
Yes, probable. Close contact with a person of a clinically compatible illness, and linkage to a confirmed case of COVID-19. Travel to a residence in an area with sustained ongoing community transition of SARS-CoV-2, or close contact with a member of a risk cohort as defined by the public health authorities during an outbreak. So this is the entire world. I mean, there is no one. How would you exclude someone from these criteria? And as I've read them, Tim, it's verbatim. This is exactly what these are. So when you look at the deaths that are attributed to COVID, this is the criteria that has the process that's gone on to identify this person as you know, someone with COVID death. So my point is, Tim Kelly and John Rappaport, I think, are right. I don't think anybody has died of this thing, because you have to back up a little bit and look at the numbers. But remember, 90% of the people who test, even using the laboratory, are not correct, right? Mm-hmm. And then you've got this other group that was perhaps positive, but it could also be any of these other categories. So if you back up, I mean, I really would like to get the blood work of one person that has died from COVID, so we could actually look at it and see, well, what would it actually look like? Because remember, we little scientism, but the coaches postulates, which shows an actual linkage between a germ and a disease, has never been successfully done with COVID. So we don't really know what it looks like at the end of life. We don't know, well, how many, you know, viri of COVID-19 are in the blood. No one's ever, it's not available to the public. And Tim, let me guarantee you, you know, like my father used to tell me about doing bookkeeping. He goes, if you don't know where the money is, it's been stolen. And here, if you don't have any of these normal tests being done, to either purify the virus or to show that it was in existence when the person died, Tim, I think if you look at all of these other things, everything that they did to create the body count, everything that they did to, create the impression that people were dying, it's a very clear picture. I honestly think there is nothing there.
Yeah, it's an artifact created by the manipulation of statistics and reporting. Yep. And of course a hologram created by the media coverage. And so it exists in people's imaginations because they've been told that it exists. And you can take general symptoms that always exist. 50,000 people a year die a week in the United States. Among those, you can always get a cohort from that and attribute it to SARS-CoV-2. It's very similar to the all of the over 200 coronaviruses. So how do you know this is what's causing the disease to begin with? The pathology, you don't know. Like you said, there's no blood test that shows us an identifiable coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, in the blood. And doesn't show us that, you know, these things exist in abundance, which would you need a heavy viral load to create sickness,
right?
Based on current understanding of virology, none of these things have been demonstrated.
No, and there was a little statistical miracle, something that happened that actually every once in a while we get lucky. Seven states continued with the old form, even though the new form had come. For some reason, they just wanted to keep the old record. Seven states. And so they published their data, which was not small. It was over 50,000 fatalities, and these were fatalities that 100% had been designated as COVID. Now, in the seven states that used the old 2003 form, which had the normal way of representing, you know, comorbidity as which was more powerful, what led to what, over 90% fatalities would not have been COVID-19, over 90%.
And there's your pandemic gone.
There goes your pandemic. Now this shows you that.
So way to cure the pandemic is just to go to the old way of reporting and we've cured it. We don't need a vaccine or we don't need any treatment.
We don't need anything.
It just goes away.
There's no virus even to talk about. Because remember, you've got 90% of these people who all tested for COVID. Well, 90% are just the old-fashioned, it was pneumonia or something else, and this COVID thing is really not much of a deal. But bear in mind, of the 10% that aren't, right, that pass the, they're all probably lab tested, which means that most of them are not even, they just were told it was COVID, right? And they didn't have any other comorbidity to, like, link it to, but it could have been pneumonia, could have been anything.
Yet, right? Despite all this, despite all this revelation, the lockdowns continue, the phase reopenings continue, the contact tracing, the testing, the invasive testing, which in itself is problematic, the push towards vaccines, even though there's established treatments, which actually make any forced vaccination illegal, because if there is an established treatment for these things, which there is, you don't need to have a vaccination program, at least a mandated vaccination program. All those resources are being devoted through Moderna to develop this DNA altering vaccine they want to push on the public. Why is that? We'll get into the metapolitics of this thing. It's got nothing to do with a pandemic or public health. This is a political and financial coup that's being a global political and financial coup that is being waged under the guise of a public health crisis that was created, ordered out of the World Economic Forum in the tail end of 2019, implemented through these global institutions like the World Health Organization and connected to the CDC and the university systems that are tied into this network, which ties in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And so we have this network that has carried out this operation. They shut down 193 economies in March of 2020. And this, I think, this Michelle Chodosky, who runs the Center for Global Research has a 60-minute video talking about this. This is a political virus. It's a cover, and it's an attempt to impose global bankruptcy so the world's resources can be bought up at a fire sale price. It's a massive wealth redistribution scam or scheme, and also a unprecedented power grab that we're seeing. And it's in your face now. And these numbers indicate that there is no real health crisis, yet people still submit to this stuff. I sent you an article that was from Zero Hedge about colleges. And I think I titled it College Hell. And it goes in and it describes what people are experiencing at colleges now and how these colleges, they've drawn students back to campus, yet imposed lockdowns on campuses. It said, here it is, article, sentenced to isolation prison. College students across America are being subjected to a hard psychological experiment. Now, I, for the longest time, have come to the belief that college itself is a psychological experiment. But they've really amped it up. I think they've turned the amp up to 11 on this one. Yeah. The reference to the Spinal Tap movie. But they've spiked it with this one. And so it's reads like this: college, long a fun and liberating experience for many young adults, has the Ron Ponce suit's Adam Dick details how it became a dreary and oppressive experience for many students living under the weight of a multitude of restrictions imposed at American college campuses in the name of countering coronavirus. These restrictions are absurd from the perspective of protecting people's health, given that the coronavirus is not particularly dangerous. This is especially the case for the teen and 20-somethings students. For these relatively young college students, coronavirus generally poses very little risk of death. Further, most such young adults experience zero symptoms to minor sickness from the coronavirus infection. I've written about the draconian restrictions imposed at college campuses in the name of countering the coronavirus, with some focus on Duke University, Syracuse University, and the University of Texas, and Texas A&M. Here's some bullet examples here. University of Alabama. The whole thing is a bait and switch. We've been forced to pay to attend Zoom classes in our rooms all semester. A few more friends didn't even come back to town, and I don't blame them. Why would they when they can get the same education at home? Only have two in-person classes. Both meet one day a week. One is optional to go to on Zoom if you prefer. The other follows five students in the class at once. We're going on shifts, so week one, the first five go, then week two, the second five go, etc. I love this university, but I never knew when I was in high school that I'd be staying in a room all day. I would never have gone to any college if I had known this. Tulane University. No gatherings over 15 people. Everyone's mental health is crumbling. Nobody is even sick, and those who quarantine follow the rules. School requires asymptomatic testing, and there's no end in sight. My guy and girlfriends are all miserable. So many have been like this. This is prison. We can't do anything. All bars closed in Louisiana. We gather at local parks, and cops come to shut it down. No fun ever allowed, and no end in sight. University of Iowa. They have isolation dorms for COVID kids. They are hard. Guys in hazmat suits come. 2 week isolation, no visitors, nurse on call, but up to 3 hour wait if you need something. Kids at school now are getting tested so they don't get sentenced to isolation prisons. Middlebury College. Students had to sign a health pledge that they had no say in developing. All students are confined to dorms until COVID tests come back negative. No one is allowed off campus until at least September 15th. No visitor on campus all year. School has a Google form so that people can snitch on non-compliers. Town is terrified of students returning. This is in a country, this is a county in Vermont, rather, that has had 5 cases and the entire state had 55 deaths. They have canceled all fall athletic competitions. Students are back on campus, but most classes will be remote, with, of course, 3% in tuition increase. Professors active on reopening committees, so it is not surprising that they are all pro-lockdown. Local state senator wrote to the school president and called the college reckless for bringing kids back. They all want to live in a bubble, take the money that the college kids bring to the community, but have no actual interaction. University of Dayton, they aren't even letting kids go to class at all. It's all on Zoom. the Ohio State University. Interim suspensions if you break any of the rules, including attending, participating in an on-campus or off-campus gatherings of more than 10. Last weekend, we were moved in our child off-campus housing. Helicopters were buzzing over the houses. There are people basically roaming around and spying on kids to bust them, and we know exactly what they're looking for. Large gatherings, it's insane. Daily check-ins of health prior to being allowed off campus. If you think this generation has anxiety issues before, can you imagine what they have now? I can get the common sense stuff, but I really wondered what country we're living in with all these with all this excess surveillance. So that's kind of a smattering.
And don't forget, Tim, there will be Adderall mm-hmm. and Prozac for any psychological problems.
Yes, because that's obviously you need some pharmacological solution to these problems. Western Carolina University, mandatory masking inside and outside. Cafeterias are closed with takeout food and long line. Families had until August 1st to decide whether to send kids and accept a no-refund policy if kids were sent home. This meant you were on the full hook for the loans and payments, even if services were no longer provided. What a scam. Of course, at that time, class reported it as hybrid. 2 weeks in, most classes have been switched to online only. Virginia Tech, only 15 people allowed to gather. Masks required outside their room, anywhere, inside or out. All classes are online. Only one person can visit a room, and masks must be worn. Immediate suspension if caught violating. This is inhumane. It's prison.
It's slave training.
That's what it is, because obviously these people are a captured audience, if you will, population. Yeah. They can't escape from it, but they're conditioning these students this type of treatment. They've been conned into coming back to school while they're subjected to these things. Again, all for what? We've been talking about all show. Just this the idea of the whole pandemic is a hologram. It's not real because it's a creation of statistical fraud, misreporting, and fake news on the media. Yet nevertheless, these things persist because it's all about training. You got to look at the meta politics of this thing. It's not about a public health crisis. It's about conditioning everyone to accept these restrictions, shutting down the economy, getting people to accept the fact that they can't move around, to stay in all time, don't socialize. You can't go to the pub and talk about these things. No right to assemble.
How can the public have a coherent response to this if they can't assemble for discussion?
Mm-hmm. And the college kids just be learning, and it's all Zoom classes. This is ridiculous. I mean, why even have that? You know, why even take up that real estate if you're not going to function as a university? You can't have a university in lockdown. It's not a university anymore. But again, all for what? We just talked. The numbers simply aren't there. There's no reality to it. It's all a product of statistical reporting fraud and fake news.
Yeah, and it's a fraud which doesn't even have to present itself as in its fraud as being more destructive than the effects of the lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've mentioned this 100 times. Where is the analysis showing that the effects of the lockdown are not more severe than the virus under the worst case? When you look at the conditions of the universities, where, of course, we know, you know, even using their numbers, which are fake, that, you know, 0.001% of these kids are actually going to pass away from COVID. Where is the analysis of what this is doing, both in terms of suicides, in terms of really severe mental health problems, and then, of course, of just an absence of the experience of democracy and freedom that you really want the college kids to bring as traditions into their lives going forward? I mean, where is that analysis to show that, you know, what we're doing it even has a possibility of not being as destructive as the lockdown? I mean,
parents are submitting, or at least accepting, like the schools were putting kids in plastic boxes or cages in classes, making them wear masks all day. Imagine the psychological effect of having to wear a mask, not to mention the health effects, not being able to breathe properly. I mean, how do people develop emotional stability or develop emotionally without reading expressions, reading people's faces? How about a baby not looking at its mother's face? There was a story I read that where there were COVID births, where a woman gave birth and they immediately put plastic between the newborn baby and the mother. That's insane. Now, what person would? I mean, imagine how brainwashed you have to be to accept that.
These are just the attributes of the Delta class. You know, there is going to be real psychological trauma to all of us for going through the mass cult, for going through the horror porn.
And you can't get the past 7 months back, by
but
the way.
But we'll be treated by the psychiatric component of the Brave New World that'll give us drugs. You know, I was going to just make a little soapbox editorial. When I went through what had happened with this bait and switch business with the getting rid of the real coroner's report with the fake COVID report, which had all of these insinuations to falsify the document, right? It was just flat out what they were doing. Financial incentives and then just very clear language incentives to like falsify the document. I had the thought, the AMA has to be a complete intellectual and moral cesspool.
Yes.
Because if it wasn't, there would have been doctors. I mean, there have been a couple that have come forward. There was a couple in Bakersfield at a press conference about 4 months ago. But there should be thousands of doctors saying, this is just wrong. This is just like an attempt at a dictatorship. In Germany, they had over 600 doctors who took the position that COVID was fake, and it was fake all over the world. Where in the U.S., where in the AMA? Because, you know, you think, well, they're all, you know, Judaic, Masonic individual. They can't be. There are thousands, tens of thousands of doctors that don't come the perspective of the Brave New World. Where are they? They can read this stuff. They know that the document was switched on the 23rd of March with this this systematic attempt to just create artificial numbers for COVID. Where are they? Why haven't they shown up?
Well, they probably figure individually they have too much to lose by speaking up.
That's right. They're intimidated, and also because they have probably financial reasons. Yeah.
Dr. Jensen up in Minnesota being investigated by the medical board?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So there you go.
This is sort of like the intimidation that they did on the Australian citizens that made the protests. You know, they send the police to the houses. Somehow it ends up on Facebook, and then everyone is frightened. But nevertheless.
Well, you know, if they kind of admit it when they said that with the Black Lives Matter, there are too many people to enforce. Well, there's your – that's what you need to do. They can't arrest everybody. You know?
No, you know where the where the real gathering of the Melbourneese is right now? It's in the people that are using the loophole in the law to get out of the region. Mm-hmm. There's this loophole that if you're going to move, you can use the essential business of moving vans. And so the moving van business is now, well, basically it's a convoy stretching all the way across Melbourne. Everyone is trying, who can, who has money, is getting out. They're agreeing to a 14-day lockdown, sequestering when they get to wherever they're headed. But there's like 30,000 people that have left, and that this is basically as many moving vans as there are. They're just trying to get out. So this is not courageous. This is, you know, it's understandable, but this isn't how you deal with something like this.
No, running away or appeasing doesn't address the issue. Just like protesting, when you're appealing, no, you have to. The situation be created where these people are chased out of office because they've shown their bad faith, their malevolent intent, and so you can't appeal to their better angels or reason or justice or what their oaths of office are. But, you know,
our psychology has been debased, and we always run. We need to stand our ground.
Well, that's because we're all atomized. That's one thing that they're trying to do. One reason why they want people at home.
That's why they atomize us, right?
On Zoom or Facebook or experience everything at home, because that way you can't assemble and organize. That's why it's so like, well, you can't assemble because it's illegal to assemble. Then how do we assemble to protest the law that's preventing us from assembling? Oh, you can't because it's illegal. It's self-justifying, you know. And
yeah.
There's an interesting article I read today. Is church officials evaluating priests who told Catholics to disobey bishop on mask wearing. This is Denver, Colorado. Both the Archdiocese of Denver and Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter are reviewing the situation of a priest who told Catholics to disobey the orders of church and civic officials regarding mask at mask and other religious services. In a video posted on YouTube yesterday, Father Daniel Nolan told Catholics, "Do not obey the bishop, do not obey the governor. They cannot tell you to wear a mask. This is a lie. They are lying to all of us. If your bishop tells you, don't do it. And I encourage everybody not to wear a mask. And I'm telling you, disobey your bishop, disobey your governor. That's what I'm telling you," Nolan added. His remarks came at the conclusion of a catechetical session offered at Our Lady of Mount Carmel Parish in Littleton, Colorado, which posted the video on YouTube Tuesday and took it down on Wednesday. Asked about the importance of obedience, Nolan told parishioners that we ought to obey God rather than man. And if the bishop tells you to do something that is contrary to your health, contrary to your reason, contrary to the common good, disobey it. It's contrary to the common good to continue to go along with an attempted communist takeover of the United States, which is what's happening. Asked in the video about the obedience to local church authorities, Nolan added, "Disobey them all. At this point, they have zero authority. They are cooperating in evil, which is the suppression of the American people, suppression of your rights, suppression of your liberties, suppression of common sense. The emperor has no clothes. If you are healthy, you have a 0.006% chance of dying from COVID. Flu has a greater chance of killing you if you're healthy. So big time lies. This is not politics anymore. This is morality." The Archdiocesan spokesman Mark Haas told Catholic news agency September 2nd that the Archdiocese is looking into the matter, noting that the YouTube video was taken down before it could be fully reviewed. But, you know, Nolan, 44, was ordained a priest of the Priestly Fraternity of St. Peter in 2014. Before entering the FSSP, he attended the United States Naval Academy and served in the Marine Corps, retiring as captain in 2006. So when he says contrary to your health, contrary to your reason, contrary to common good, that pretty much sums up the whole entire coronavirus scam. I mean, he's right. The bishops are part of the scam. I suspect the bishops have been bribed and or blackmailed to go along with the agenda, which is fundamentally evil, you know, an antichrist. So yes, ignore the apostate bishops who are colluding with the state. They canceled Easter, and they're likely going to cancel Christmas if this keeps going. You know, that's where we are. I'm sorry.
It's cancel culture, buddy.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, Christmas is just one more element. This is the brave new world. The virus is just the thinnest pretext. And we have been pulverized psychologically for the last, you know, as a people for the last, well, since the end of World War II. And now we are isolated and are easy to pick off. We don't stand together. You know, we're looking, in my opinion, at hunger being one of the controlling elements pretty quick. I don't think it's circumstance. You've had the blowing up of all of these food storage container areas. I think that this will be something that'll be in play.
Well, this is what the World Economic Forum has so much as admitted with their Great Reset scheme that they're announcing next year. Klaus Schwab wrote a book. He calls it the Fourth Industrial Revolution. This is an opportunity to reset the global economic order. What does that mean? Do you think the World Economic Forum and the people who engage in that, the captains of industry, the politicians and these things, the world, what they do is consequential? Is it important? Well, yeah, of course it's important. Why does it get less press coverage than, say, the Academy Awards and NFL draft? That's the question you should ask yourself. But when they're talking in these terms and they're implementing these plans, what are going to be the consequences? Well, in order to get that great reset, they need a crisis. And they've said it. This is a crisis that can't go to waste. It's an opportunity to impose this economic reset. And part of this is destroying the currency, destroying the economies, creating food shortages. Because once these food shortages make themselves obvious, people are now dealing with empty shelves and not being able to feed their families, their mind isn't going to be on the coronavirus scam or whether it's true or not. They're going to worry about being hungry, and they'll settle for anything at that time. They're trying to create those conditions. And you can't, had this ambitious plan to reset the global economy and try to implement this through normal political channels, through elections and public discourse and debate. No, you do it by changing the conditions, the objective conditions, through psychological covert warfare. This is what this pandemic is. It's psychological and covert warfare. And that's something that needs to be identified. So you change the conditions by creating a crisis. And there's so much as admitting it, you know, and they wargamed it. We've talked about it, how they were tabletop wargamed this thing back in October 2019. They've talked about it. Bill Gates talks about it, you know, and so, and we've established the connections, the network, if you will, the schematic of all these institutions interacting, connecting, how it's the people coordinate. They all go to the same, hang out at the same places, so to speak. They, you know, whether it's the CDC, the Epidemic Intelligence Service, the World Health Organization, Imperial College of London,
the hot tub at Jeffrey Epstein's island.
Yeah, the Lolita Express.
The policy gets made. Yeah.
And how they go out and they fan out and they populate the various institutions, public health services, commissioners of various states, hospitals, state medical boards. And they populate all these institutions, so now it's able to be coordinated. And you wonder how it's coordinated, you have to look at something like Agenda 21, which, you know, it's kind of funny. I noticed that people who are familiar with Agenda 21 and its plans have a very easy time identifying this as an operation, because it's following the same method. And, you know, where you have local initiatives that are being actually centrally controlled but appear to be local. This is now why you have like mayors and governors and county commissioners engaging in this, and how the federal government is kind of aloof from it. You know, it's being carried out locally at the state level. But we've established connections going back to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the dozens of agencies and think tanks that coordinated state responses to this supposed pandemic, and they're all connected.
When you see Gates having this clandestine control over the food production and food distribution in the world, you'd better believe that he's intending to use that as part of the vaccine program.
Yes. Yes.
That's how you're going to get your food is with your vaccine schedule on your chip being up to date.
And the World Health Organization, it's kind of funny because they'll release studies or reports about how a polio vaccine has crippled people in Africa. Maybe they shouldn't be taking the vaccine. It cripples more people than the wild polio. And of course, Bill Gates, what he did in India, where he crippled 400,000 kids and was kicked out of India for his efforts. Yet he's still appearing on CNN and offering his opinion on public health, world health, even though he's a college dropout.
I will never be able to attend another sporting event unless there's a vaccine.
Yes.
And when you think about that statement in light of how fake the construction of the mortality they claim for the COVID-19 infection is, boy, you're looking at real evil right in the face. You know, I mean, that is just, he's simply mind controlling us, trying to get us ready for this vaccine, which you can just be sure is going to leave us sterile and also intellectually diminished.
Mm-hmm. Yet he's treated as, you know, the font of all wisdom on this matter. He sounds like Kermit the Frog, and he dresses like Mr. Rogers, you know.
Yeah, well, the media is their plaything, and so he just can look in any way. He's basically, a CGI character. I mean, it's just computer generated as they present him, and there's almost nothing real about him. In fact, we've done shows on, you know, what he is really. But he's being presented as someone who's wise and technically savvy and trying to help us, supposedly. Well, we need to rebel against this. I just think that we have the enough of a coherent and an organized response. I think the events last week showed how many people aren't buying it. We haven't organized yet. We have the numbers. I was seeing some polling data on how many people are going to take the vaccine, or claiming that they will. It's decreasing every day. So the alt media is in fact having the correct effect. What we don't have at this point is an organization. We need to link up all of the fear and anger, hopefully a lot of anger, into an organization that is connected. It's heartening for me to get communications from people from so many different countries. This is really great. We're trying to organize. We're trying to connect one country with the other, one group with the next. They mentioned Melbourne and Auckland in some of the speeches in Berlin last week. And that just made my heart soar like a dove, because this is the connection we need to develop. The Gentile is widespread and has been atomized. But now in the crisis, we're starting to recognize one another. And so we need to organize. And that's really the it's the only issue going forward. Is just organization of people who understand the reality of the brave new world. We have to organize across every country, all of the states, everywhere. And if we do, if we become visible as an organization, of course it'll be pillared as a right wing or something, but it's irrelevant. We just have to roll through that. They can't genocide us on one hand and accuse us of anti-Semitism or some other, you know, intellectual or psychological problem on the other. Once the process of genocide is clear, then hopefully all of that goes away. All the propaganda will start to disappear. People will start acting in self-interest. And the alternative media, the independent media, has created a format. We've actually done it. It's over the last 20 years. You could see it last weekend. I know David Icke is compromised, but it was, you know, it wasn't Prince Charles talking to the crowds. It was someone from the alternative media. And the alternative media was very present in the Berlin demonstration. It was everywhere. And it was capturing the false flag aspect of it and presenting it this week, you know, as a fact to all of the people paying attention. So, we're in existence. We have to just continue the process more dynamically, which means more people, more organization. In Melbourne, this is what they should be doing right now, is not fleeing. What's the point of fleeing? You think you go to Perth or something, it's going to be fine there. They'll just come after you in a few months.
Well, yeah, it's not like you can vote with your feet, because
that's just not possible.
Yeah.
You have to vote. By destroying the Masonic control of you that they use with this facade of government. That's the only way out. And that first entails organization. They've got to organize. They have to information distribute. They have to do the things necessary to be a force that can actually expose and then take down the Masonic government of Australia.
Well,
it should be easy to do, because people are going to be hungry pretty soon.
Yeah, the protest can't be an appeal. It has to be a demand to step down or face the consequences. And it does come to that.
Prepared to pay the blood price. And you mentioned this last week, and I thought it was so real and clear. You looked at the Berlin demonstration, which we had been hoping would have more grit and intensity, and you could see the John Lennon posters and, you know, the gay pride, you know,
kind of aspect
of it. And you sent that communication to me and you said, this looks like an appeal. And I agree that is unfortunately how it was eventually constructed. It was an appeal.
Yeah.
Appeals work.
Look at the soulless eyes of a Dan Andrews or a Gretchen Whitmore or Cuomo or Gavin Newsom. What are you appealing to? And that's when you realize that, then you say, okay, this is the reality. What do we do next? And that's where
exactly.
You know.
That's right. Well said. That is the correct approach. And don't be depressed and don't be afraid. Those emotions will disappear once you start to fight.
No, you have to do what's right from day to day, and you don't know how these things unfold. So all you have to do is just from day to day speak up for the truth as you see it, and stand up for yourself. Be prudent about it. That's true. I'm not asking everyone to. I'm not encouraging people to go out and create confrontations, but every day you got to question these things, and when the opportunity arises, speak up against it.
You know, when you'll know that the independent media is really connecting psychologically with the public in the right way is when there was a video circulated. It was Australian. This one guy wouldn't put a mask on. He said he had a medical exemption. There was a single police officer had a taser, right? And he really, injured the individual who was trying to take that position. Mm-hmm. You'll know that we are actually having the correct effect when all of the people in the train prevent that from happening.
Yeah, they turn on the police. Yeah,
exactly, because the police are illegitimate.
Yeah,
we see the police as representing the old era.
By the way, these are the same cops who are bowing, taking a knee to Black Lives Matter in June.
Yeah, I mean, this is a new world, brave new world, and cops are, you have to see them as jackbooted thugs representing dictatorship. The cops don't even know what they are really representing, but that's how the public needs to respond to them, is that they have no legitimacy. The violence they bring to us is illegitimate. It's not representing any kind of democratic purpose. So it would be the same response you'd have to a street gang, like a motorcycle gang that pulled up and suddenly wanted to beat up a woman. What would the men do in that crowd? Because that's what we're facing. We have to make that mental switch. These aren't the elements of democracy. This is a drug-crazed motorcycle gang that has just shown up with no legitimacy whatsoever and is tasering a woman because she had some political position they didn't like. What will the men do in that group, in that crowd? Mm-hmm. What will they do? And so that's what, hopefully.
Well, a good example is the point where you brought what's going on in Portland, where you have that tent city being financed by the city. And so the attitude of the middle class, for the longest time is, I follow the rules, I pay my taxes. What do I have to worry about? Because this is the system I support and it serves me. Well, obviously that isn't the case. Just paying your taxes and doing what you're told isn't working anymore. And we're getting to the point where you're going to have to start thinking and acting like a dissident. And that day will come for each and every one of us.
That's right. And that's why organization, and also, sad to say, being armed. These are the things that are really important. You have to be able to defend yourself, because if you look at the video that I was suggesting people look at, what you're really looking at is the organized effort by the local government to kill and destroy the lives of the middle class.
Yes, this will end in genocide if you don't do anything about it.
Exactly right. They aren't going to stop. They can't stop. I mean, once they have identified themselves in such a way, they can't stop. I mean, this is what I was saying to the people in Australia. I was saying, look, once they have gone this far, you think they're going to suddenly go, oh my gosh, we'll let you have the right of assembly. Of course not. They can never do it ever again. The right of assembly is gone in Melbourne. It'll never come back unless it's brought back by force of arms. Mm-hmm. Because they cannot let you have that right, because they know it'll be used to identify them as traitors and as a secret society intent on genocide. What else could be the conclusion of the public if they're permitted to actually do an analysis of a fake virus, which then led to a lockdown of such severity, which destroyed the economy? I mean, these pieces don't fit together in any other way. There is no puzzle solution other than it is a deliberate attempt to destroy the middle class, the white Gentile middle class of Melbourne. That's what's going on right now.
Yep. So that's where we are now. So, okay, Joe.
That's it. Well, Tim, good talking to you. And next week, I hope we'll have even more positive news to report.
Yep. Don't be discouraged.
No, we're not. Are you kidding? No, we we should have been discouraged over the last, like, well, since the end of World War II. Finally, we're starting to have the elements of being able to fight back. The counter-rebellion is something that's possible now.
Yeah, yeah. It's an opportunity, actually, yes.
We have to make it happen.
Yeah. Okay, Joe, take it easy.
All right, Tim. Talk to you soon, brother.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.